Blog Talk Radio.
This is Colin from Can I Justify. You're rocking Attitude Era Live with Icon, Granny Hawkster, and Big Swin.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you are hearing that sound, you know exactly what time it is. It is Attitude Era Monday Live Monday time here on 89.1 Ken's FM. And with me is always our good friend, the Modern Nightmare Matthias. How are you, sir?
Well, after another long week of work and a weekend, another weekend full of work with unfortunately no wrestling involved this weekend, but next weekend there will be. I'm ready to do another live show here on 89.1 Ken's FM.
And we have the godmother of wrestling with us. We have Granny Hawkster. How are you, ma'am?
I'm very well, Icon. Glad to be here for another great show on Ken's FM 89.1 tonight.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We have a big show tonight. And first off, we have Paul Borghese, who starred as Yogi Berra in the movie 61, along with others. We have Leslie Scarborough. Now, Matthias, have you ever seen the movie Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield?
Maybe once. It's not really ringing a bell at this moment.
Okay, well, let me tell you about Leslie Scarborough here real quick. In the movie, at the beginning, Rodney Dangerfield goes to see his son at college, and he walks into the wrong dorm. And he walks upstairs, and he pulls the curtain back and says, "Hey, buddy, can you help me?" And it happens to be a woman that's taking a shower.
Oh, boy.
And he says, "I'm sorry, baby, I didn't see nothing. Then he pulls the curtain back and says, "You're perfect. And we're going to talk to her because she was the gal in the shower in that scene."
Oh, wow.
And we also have Marty Schiff. Now, he used to be on a TV show when I was a kid called Out of Control. And it was on Nickelodeon, back when Nickelodeon was Nickelodeon, when they had Double Dare and You Can't Do That on Television, Out of Control, Danger Mouse, Inspector Gadget, you know, when Nickelodeon was Nickelodeon. And because of this man, I served many weekends of grounding because my mom told me, do not watch that show. She didn't like it. And I watched it anyway, and I served a lot of groundings because of that show, and now hopefully I can have him apologize to me for all the groundings I served when I was a kid because of him.
Well, we'll see, I suppose.
All right. Well, we'll get into that in the second hour. So, Granny, first off, here before our first guest calls in, let me know what's up with you. How have you been doing? Any wrestling for you last weekend or last week?
Well, David and I went to Kansas for a couple of days to see my mom, and lo and behold, I found out about a wrestling show in Olathe, Kansas Saturday night, so David and I ended up going to Trailblazer Championship Wrestling. They're a fairly new company. I think this was like their fourth show. I got to see some friends that I hadn't seen in a while. I got to make some new friends. Of course, I wasn't prepared to going to be planning on going to wrestling shows, so naturally I didn't have my Granny Hawkster shirt, but I proudly wore my We Are WFC shirt to the wrestling show Saturday night. Had a lot of fun. It was only about 20 minutes away from where I was actually staying at in Kansas, so it made a nice little fun night, you know. So, but I got to tell you guys about, we went out with some friends for an early lunch Saturday afternoon, about 3 o'clock, to this restaurant. And it was called The Suburban. And there was 8 of us. And we sat out on the patio, nice afternoon, you know, not hot, you know, very nice fall day. And I tell you, the food there in this restaurant is absolutely to die for. I mean, David and I, we split a Philly cheesesteak sandwich, I mean, that was more than a foot-long sandwich, and we had French fries with it. Now, the fries were a little bit different than I had ever seen before. It was kind of like long, like a steak fry, but they were sliced thin, you know, kind of like almost like a potato chip, but they weren't, you know, crunchy like a chips, but they were French fries, and they were really good, and they had a good flavor. And of course, the cheesesteak came with, you know, mushrooms and peppers if you wanted them, and I mean, it was a good sandwich. But my friend ordered this, and next time we go there, I told my husband, next time we go there, we're going to order this dinner, and we're going to split it. Now, I know you guys have all heard of chicken fried steak, right? I mean,
yes.
You all, okay. Well, this guy, I mean, he's a gourmet chef that owns a restaurant. He has come up with different types of things for his. This was a chicken fried ribeye steak, okay? And it
wow.
was braided like a ribeye steak. I'll have to pull up the picture. If I could send you guys the picture, I'll have to send it to you because it had mashed potatoes, it had green beans, and then it had the white gravy over the top of the chicken fried ribeye steak.
Wow, I'm
number
getting
one,
hungry now. Thanks, Granny.
And number one, it was huge. Number one, it was absolutely huge. But it was so tender. I mean, my friend, he cut 3 or 4 pieces off and put it on mine and David's plate so we could actually try it, and it was absolutely out of this world. I've never even heard of anything like that, but it was absolutely amazing. So that's the kind of weekend that we had. We got back, we left early Friday morning, got back yesterday morning about 10:30 yesterday morning, I guess. Had a fun trip, you know. My mom, she's doing good, so got to see some wrestling. But I'm really waiting for this Saturday for WFC because it is going to be their 11th year anniversary show. I cannot wait for that. It's going to be an amazing night. I have been so ready for the show for the past couple of months. I can't wait for it, so...
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I can't wait to talk about that next week. You know, we have big shows now from now until the end of the year, and we'll talk more about next week about the upcoming fundraiser that they're going to have here at 89.1 Kansas FM. We're going to have you all listen in. We'll have more details for you about that next week. And before our next guest should be calling in here shortly. I might have to cut you off, Matthias, but you mentioned no wrestling this weekend. How about our last weekend? How about this coming weekend? Anything going on this weekend for you?
Yes, as a matter of fact, Below Zero Wrestling is hosting a show in Wahpeton at the Wahpeton Event Center. And I just found out today by the workings of BZW that I just so happened to be in a tag team match with fellow Sly Guy, Mac. It'll be Mac and myself with Sylvester J. Fox in our corner, and we're taking on DeLorean Diggs and downtown Petey Brown. And, you know, we're looking to get another victory for the Sly's guys and keep on moving on. I mean, they've been a thorn in our side here for the past few months or so with DeLorean trying to attack Sylvester and Petey deciding to stick his nose in somewhere it doesn't belong. So me and the 7-foot-tall Mac will have to take care of a little business on Sunday, and then at the next show, it'll be we'll see what goes on after that.
Well, I'll tell you what, we will talk about that more next week, but our first guest is ready. We're going to take a quick little commercial break, and we will be back after these messages from our sponsor. Still not work. No, anyway, we'll go to our guests, and we'll have our resident fixer, check that out. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room, walking down the aisle, he is the reason why everybody watched the movie 61. He's the reason why everything was back in the day. And he was also the great Irishman with the family. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you my buddy. He is Paul Borghese.
Hey, this is Paul Borghese. That's right. You're listening to the Attitude Era Monday, live on 89.1 Kens FM, with your host, the Icon. Big deal. He only counts as one. Mr. Ambidextrial, the Big Swing, the Godmother of Wrestling, Granny Hulkster, and the Modern Hulkster, and the Modern Nightmare, Matthias. Hey, Icon, you're not concentrating. 90% of radio is half mental.
Hey, Paul, how are you, buddy? Good to have you with us.
All right. I hope I threw that out there good for you.
Oh, perfect. Yes. As a matter of fact, you hit all my favorite quotes from the movie 61. We're going to be talking a lot about that because it is pretty topical. We all know that the movie 61, of course, was about Roger Maris and the hellacious season he had in 1961. It was great for breaking the Babe Ruth record, but he also went through heck and back during that season. We'll talk a lot about that movie. We'll also talk a little bit more about some of the other projects that you have. So we have Paul Borghese. We're on 89.1 Ken's FM. We have 35 minutes here with our buddy. So here's what we're going to do here, Paul. Before I ask you a few questions, and we'll do a roundtable, you going to give us a little background about yourself, then I'll ask you some questions. We'll do the roundtable, and we'll come back to me. I'll ask you the tougher questions.
You want me to give you a background about myself? Okay, well, usually when I do a radio show, they have my background, and they ask me about my background. I don't know what I want to tell you. I've been in the business for a very long time. I'm an actor and a director, also a writer and a producer, so I kind of work on all sides of the camera. And as far as what I've done, I mean, I've been in a lot of movies and on a lot of TV shows. The one you were talking about in particular is the HBO movie 61 that I played Yogi Berra in. I'm the only actor to ever portrayed Yogi Berra as a player in a movie or a TV show. As a matter of fact, tomorrow night I'm going to, they're coming out with a new Yogi Berra wine. I'm going to the Yogi Berra Museum for the launch party, and wine tasting is that. So all these years later, I'm still stay very connected and tied into the Berra family, and also very friendly with the Maris family, because after we did 61, Barry Pepper and I, who played Roger, went to the Roger Maris Celebrity Golf Tournament in Fargo, North Dakota for, I guess, about 6 years in a row. So
that's where you met me for the first time.
That's where I met you for the first time. That's right. And I didn't want the record broken. I wanted to stay at 61. I wanted Roger to still hold the record but share it with Aaron Judge. So I was actually one of the people who was disappointed the record got broken.
And I was as well. And you know, speaking of the Maris family, you know, I've known the Marises since 1985 when the tournament first started. They've watched me grow up. They've been a major part of my family for several years. Unfortunately, the tournament is not like it used to be anymore. You know, we don't get the celebrity draw that we used to. And I remember the first time I met
you.
Yeah, and I remember the first time I met you. Go ahead, sir.
No, I was just saying that a lot of them are gone. You know, a lot of the old-time players that used to come and kill, or they can't do the trip, you know, so because that's the type of tournament that was. You know, you had the old-time baseball players, football players, a lot of the athletes, and that's years later. And, you know, unfortunately, we've lost a lot of them. And even taking, if they're still around, taking the trip is a project for them, you know.
And one thing that you might remember is even though you and I both are not golfers, I can't remember if it was the first or second year that I got to play golf with you during the tournament. It didn't go very well for me. And if I recall, it didn't go very well for you either. I remember the one year that I played with Barry. That was the year that Billy Crystal was here. Billy Crystal said to me, "So you're the icon now. The way you golf, was your nickname in high school Pick Him Last?" And I'm like, wow, that was. Well, hey, that was his goal, not mine.
That was good.
So
that
anyway,
good.
Let's talk a little bit about the movie 61, and then we'll do a roundtable, and then we'll talk to you about some of the other stuff that you were going. Now, as an actor, we all want to. How can I say this? We all want to play somebody famous and then become somebody famous as an actor. Now, what was it like playing Yogi Berra and the fact that he was still around at the time that you played him? Did you get to meet him? Did he have any influence on how you played him? Did he like the way you played him?
Sure. Not every actor wants to necessarily play a famous person and then become famous themselves. And, you know, a lot of actors like myself, I want to be a working actor. I want to do well at acting. It's not necessarily about becoming famous because that can be a hindrance in a lot of ways. But getting to play someone who was, you know, as an Italian-American actor and being very pro-Italian-American and playing, you know, an Italian-American baseball icon, for me, that was really the highlight of my career. You know, Yogi's a Hall of Famer. He's revered by many other players. And he just the fact that he, you know, was still alive was such a treat because HBO arranged for me to go to the Yogi Berra Museum and meet with Yogi so I could get to know him a little better. So it was a slow process because Yogi's quiet at first until he gets to know you and then he trusts you. And then after that, you know, he was helping me because I played righty as well, and but Yogi hit lefty and I hit righty. So Yogi helped me to learn how to like switch it to be able to hit the ball lefty like he did. And so that was like a great treat just to just be standing there with Yogi and saying, hold the bat like this and swing like this. And, you know, so I developed a nice relationship with him, you know, that I cherished in the time that I had with him and his lovely wife, Carmen. Carmen Berra was a real sweetheart. Now very good friends with his granddaughter, Lindsay. I've been to the recent premiere of It Ain't Over, which is an hour and a half documentary about Yogi and Yogi's life and Yogi's career, which is absolutely phenomenal. And everyone should go see that because it's going to be released theatrically.
Did he give you any Yogi-isms?
I think there were a few times where he said things that we weren't quite sure if they were intentional or if they were Yogi-isms. A lot of years ago, so I can't remember. I think there was one funny thing that we went out to dinner one night with Billy Crystal. We all had been working on setting Yogi's with us, and something happened where he asked for his drink, and he said, you know, he asked for a cocktail, and he said something about, not ice or something about ice, you know, and she says, oh, so you want it straight up? And he said, no, I want it without any ice. And we all kind of looked at each other, and we like, was that an accidental Yogi-ism, or was that like, did he say that on purpose? Like, you just didn't know, you know? But I used to know them all. I used to know, like, the back of my hand, but I had a book full of Yogi-isms. Yogi signed it for me. He signed a lot of things for me. And, a lot of them have evaded me, except, like, the most popular ones that everybody always says.
You know, one thing, when Yogi Berra was here for the Roger Maris Golf Tournament, it was him and his son, Dale. And I actually heard a Yogi-ism when he was at the hotel. And he said to Dale, I guess they ordered a pizza or something. And he said to his son, Dale, he said, why do they have to cut these things in 8 slices? If they cut it in 4 slices, I'd be able to eat the whole thing. And I'm like,
I think that's
kind of weird, you know. Paul Borghese is our guest here on 89.1 KISS FM. We got 28 minutes here with our buddy here. We're going to do a roundtable, and we're going to come back and talk to – I'll ask you a few tougher questions. But first, let me introduce you to Granny Hulkster. Granny, what do you got for our guest, Paul Borghese? Go ahead.
Well, welcome to the show, Paul. It's a pleasure and honor to have you on tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So how many years have you actually been – an actor?
Oh, I'm not sure exactly how many years. And as an actor, you always want to get cast in the roles that you look as old as you. If you look younger than you are, you want to keep it like that. So if I start saying how long I've been acting, I probably give away my age, and I play younger than I am. So a very long time. Let's say just, you know, I didn't do much acting in high school, maybe a couple of plays. And I really didn't get into acting. And I got into acting and production at the same time, which was after I finished college and I went back to school again for film and television production and for acting all of my 20s. So it's been a long time.
And what has been the most interesting time that in any kind of movie that you've been a part of, what has been one of the most interesting times that you've done?
And you can't say playing golf with me, that'd be too easy.
Yeah, playing golf with Icon. Well, circling back to what we started talking about, I mean, one of the most interesting, most fun, the most rewarding roles I got to play was playing Yogi Berra, because it was, I worked the whole summer on that movie. And I mean, most guys pay to go to a fantasy baseball camp. I got paid to go to fantasy baseball camp because, you know, HBO sent us to train as baseball players, like, you know, like let's say the five leads, Barry Pepper, Thomas Jay, myself, Dominic Lombardozzi, who played Moose Gowan, and Chris Bauer. And, so that was just a lot of fun, and then we just got, you know, we worked in California, we worked in New York, we worked in at the old Detroit Tiger Stadium that's now been torn down. They actually used that as Yankee Stadium, and in post production they did effects, special effects to make it look more like Yankee Stadium. But yeah, that was the most unique and most interesting and fun experience for me, I would say, getting to play Yogi.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And
I believe you guys only had, like, what was it, 36 shooting days or something for the film?
I don't remember how many shooting days. I know that whatever it was, I know that the budget kept going up. You know, Billy Crystal got sick with the shingles because he had so much stress making that movie. But it was so beautiful, so well made. It was incredible. Haskell Wexler was a cinematographer who shot the sound of music. You know, he's a master. And, you know, they were always shooting with, like, three cameras at the same time. And it was just so well calculated, every shot that they needed, every frame that they needed. But it was a big, big movie to make. The amount of money, from what I remember, the movie was made for only about $30 million, which is, like, nothing for a movie like that. And it's just that everyone wanted to work for HBO, everyone wanted to work for Billy Crystal, everyone wanted to work, under Haskell Wexler as a DP, and the story, to be a part of that story. I mean, look, it's circling back to all of us 20 years later because of what's happening. I mean, who would have thought that the record was broken in 1961 with 61 home runs, and then 61 years later, the record's getting broken, and you got number 9 chasing, number 99 chasing down number 9 for the record. You know, the numbers are just crazy. So, but it's come back full circle to all of us as far as these radio shows and podcasts and appearances and things like that. So it's always fun when you do something in your career that circles back like that. Not only for that, but residuals. They're showing the movie a lot more, so we're all making more money.
You know, and I'll tell you what, I know that you still have contact with Barry Pepper. I'd do anything to have you hook me back up with him so we can get him on the show, because I know that he's got some stories about my poor golf game, too, but we can talk about that later. But I'm going to introduce you to Matthias. Now, this is one guy that would like you to play him in if you ever do a wrestling movie, Matthias, the Modern Nightmare, would like you to portray him because he loves you as an actor. So, Matthias, what do you have for the guy that you want to have play you? Go ahead.
Well, yes, you are talking to the man from every woman's greatest dream and every man's worst nightmare, North Dakota's number one heel, current reigning, defending, undisputed EWI Diamond and APW World Heavyweight Champion, Matthias here.
Wow.
Welcome onto the show.
He doesn't have an ego, really.
Yeah, I kind of do. But anyway.
You have to
as
a wrestler.
Exactly. So when I'm usually a guest on a radio show or a podcast or whatever it is, I get usually asked the question, when was your this is it moment? Like, when did you realize this is something you wanted to do? So if I may ask you, what was your this is it moment? Like, this is something I want to do. This is something I want to make a career out of, et cetera, et cetera.
Before I had a career? You mean,
like,
in
any,
mean...
like what made you decide, hey, I want to become an actor? Like for me as a wrestler, getting in the ring and training initially was like, okay, I really want to do this. This is what I can become. This is what I can do. What was your this is it moment? Like, was it a movie you watched
project? I'll tell you what it means. By the way, I wrestled all through junior high school, high school, and part of college. This is a point of fact, since you're a wrestler, since you're talking about me playing you in a movie. But I think I was really, like, I was in my 20s, and, kids in their 20s now, they're not entrepreneurial and as ambitious in trying to start their own businesses, you know. They're not doing much in their 20s if they don't have to. But a friend of mine and I opened up a sort of a pizza and pasta joint, and it had a wine and beer bar, and it was called Al Pauly's because his name was Al and my name was Paulie, so it was called Al Pauly's. And we made a local commercial, you know, and I just got the bug because I got very involved in the commercial, not only like in the production of it and how it was going to look and what we were going to say, but being in it and then, you know, airing it and then wanting to revise it to make it different. So that got me real excited, that. And I said, oh, my God, like, I want to do this. I love this. And that's when I went back to school after college to Center for the Media Arts in Manhattan to learn film and television production. And at the same time, I went to HB Studios to start studying acting. So it all kind of happened at the same time. So that was the absolute moment for me where I was like, I have to do this.
Wow.
And from that point on, I've been working on it.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, from that point on, I've been, you know, working in the business and fortunate enough to make a living at it. Just it's not an easy thing to do in this business.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then is there a genre of, like, film that or a project or anything that you have not worked on yet that you've really wanted to throughout your career?
I've probably worked on most genres. I mean, I've very, very much worked both as a director and an actor, you know, a lot of the mob movies and the mob genre. I've been called to work on not only for rewrites of scripts, but directing and producing and played many, many, many mob roles and detective roles and cop roles. If there's a genre that I've worked in comedy, so, you know, I can't say I haven't done comedy. I don't, you know, something that's coming up that I might be doing that a producer is pushing me to do is to write and direct a Christmas movie and a Christmas comedy. So that might be up next for me. That's a very good possibility of that. And I've always wanted to direct a small town drama, not with mob, mob, but just a small town drama, which would take, you know, really focused and concentrated writing with a really good story. So that's kind of where I'm at with the different things I want to try. I don't have like a, you know, big desire to be a voice in animation or to do any of these big Marvel movies. I'm sure they're big money, so I do them, but, you know, and I'm a character actor, I'm not a leading man. And as you know, I'm not such a great golfer. After what I said,
yeah.
I don't golf. We just went to have fun. But, you know, it's time to hit the ball, and you're like, oh, wow, I could do this. And then you get up there again and just completely miss the ball. But that was fun, and it was for charity. So I thought that was, you know, great that we were invited and that we attended as many times as we did.
Yeah.
Not to change
Paul Borghese here. Paul Borghese here, I guess. Here we got about 18 minutes here with Paul. And for those of you who listen to our show regularly, if you go to our Facebook page, Attitude Era, Live Monday, like that. You go to 89.1 Ken's FM page, like that. Do a $10 a month donation of Power of the Tower. We'll get you qualified to win an autograph from a past guest, current guest, and future guest. I got a nice little care package from Mr. Borghese, and start entering now, and we'll get you qualified to win an autograph from Paul. Now, one thing I do want to ask Paul is, you know, you are from New York. Now, is it kind of a bad stereotype that people from New York play gangsters all the time? Is that a bad stereotype, or do you guys like that stereotype, or is it not a stereotype?
I don't think it has anything to do with if you come from New York. I think the best gangster-type actors just happen to come from New York because there's just a lot more realism to them. I mean, I've seen different movies that were obviously shot in Canada or something to me, and I see that the, you know, the wise guys or the tough guys that are in them just don't come across with that, you know, that realism and that authenticity that you get from a New York guy. Like even if he's just an actor, he's been around enough and heard enough where he's picked up enough, and I think, you know, they just bring more of a realism to it. As far as getting stereotyped, it's not so much stereotype, typecast. I don't really care. I mean, as long as you're working, someone's always going to want to try something different, but you're blessed just to be working. So if you're getting a lot of mob roles and tough guy roles, or you're getting cast as a cop all the time, just consider yourself blessed because there's people that aren't getting any work. And that's how I feel about it.
Paul Borghese, our guest here on 89.1 Ken Zeb. We got, unfortunately, we only got 16 minutes. I wish it was 16 years because I have a lot to ask him about. But one thing I do want to ask you about is the first time I ever saw you in a movie, and I know I'm kind of a comic book geek here, but you were in The Toxic Avenger Part 2, and you're also in The Toxic Avenger Part 3, and you're also in The Class of Nukem High Part 2. Apparently they had to have a good actor such as you for a sequel. So what was it like being in a film like that?
And also the company was Troma Films, and it was Lloyd Kaufman and Michael Herz used to co-direct. And the other movie I did for them was Troma's War. I don't know. It was like early on in my career, and they cast me in like one of their movies, and I did some stunt work early in my career. So I was doing, you know, like playing a role and also a stuntman on the stunt team. And they were just like fun movies, and they were, you know, early in my career, and it was where I was like kind of like cutting my teeth and making my bones. And they're real goofy, culty kind of, you know, kind of movies. But it's funny because, you know, Toxic Avenger is always going to be like a cult classic. So it's funny when people bring up and go, holy shit, you know, you were in Toxic Avenger 2 and 3. And I was really only in 2, but they used extra footage they shot in 3. So I went up in both. And then, I went out to California to work on Class of Nukem High 2 and played two different roles in that movie, which was fun. And then, yeah, Troma's War was shot in New York, not that far from where I lived. And that was a crazy movie. And that was where I really, really was heavy duty on the stunt crew with that and did mostly stunts, but played the role of Gubu, one of the lead terrorists on there. So, yeah, that was an interesting learning experience.
You know, and also remember the PG language. But now you work with many directors. We were talking about... Yeah, we were talking about you work with Billy Crystal, but I want to know what it's like working with Martin Scorsese and the fact that you got to be in a movie with Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, and Joe Pesci, the ultimate gangsters. What was it like working with those guys?
Yeah, isn't that something? I actually had worked with Robert De Niro prior to that. I worked on a movie called The Family with Robert De Niro, Michelle Pfeiffer, Tommy Lee Jones, and Dominic Lambertozzi. We worked for a month in France on that, and so, you know, I got to work with Bob before that, and I knew him from prior, but this particular movie, The Irishman, yeah, I was actually worked on it did more work on the movie than showed up in the movie, because it's a very long movie, as you know, and they cut a lot of it. So one of the scenes that I wound up being in was with Joe Pesci, and I had known Joe from before, so it was really just such a great time because, I mean, Joe was so cool and we were improvising and Marty was like, he's just a great director, you know, and he keeps doing it over and over and over again and until he gets it right. So, you know, he's easygoing and just like a fun, I mean, I felt like I was just like watching him. I was, you know, in awe watching him just speaking and after all the years of not having gotten to work with him and finally getting there. And, you know, the Joe Pesci experience was fantastic because when I first got there, Joe said, he was, hey, yeah, I haven't seen you in a long time. And I said, yeah, I haven't seen you in a long time, Joe. And he's like, he knew my dad because we had a family business in Little Italy of the Bronx called B&G Clothes, a men's suit store. And he said, hey, how's your father doing? How's your dad doing? I said, oh, no, sorry, we lost my dad a few years back. And he said, oh, geez, I'm sorry, I didn't know this and that. And every time we ended our scene at the end, when I was walking out of the store, he would say, and don't forget to say hello to your father for me. So I didn't say anything. I left it alone, and we did it every time, every million times. At the very end, I went over to him. I said, hey, Joe, I got to ask you something. You said, like, you know, make sure you say hello to your father for me. That wasn't really part of our characters in the script. Was that, like, our character? Was that kind of you and me, you kind of saying something? He goes, what do you think? I was saying that to you, like, for your father, so you could go home to your mother and tell her Joe, like mentioned, remembers dad in the movie. So every time you watch that movie, you know I'm talking like to say hello to your father, you know, not our characters, but me and you. So I thought that was like a real, like, it was like a gift, you know, from him to do something that, you know, that sweet and that sentimental. So not many people know that, but that's the story behind that little improv line by Joe at the end of that scene.
And, you know, we get a lot of our information here from IMDb.com. And I'm looking at the stuff that you're going now. You got, it looks like you got three movies in post-production. You got one filming, Movies with All My Friends. Apparently, you're going to cast me in that later. And then you have, you have five movies in pre-production. You have one that was just announced, All Mobbed Up. So being involved in all these different films at one time in pre-production, do you, like, go to, like, one set and, like, film for a couple weeks and go to the next one and then go to the next one? How do you keep all that straight?
Well, IMDb is not always completely up to date. Like, it says that movie with All My Friends, which Aidan Skye wrote and directed, it's actually just finished being shot. So it's not in pre-production anymore. Now it's in post-production getting edited. So I already played a role in that, and I was a co-producer on that. You know, another movie that was just mentioned there, I believe, was a critical acclaim, which might show that it was still in pre-production. Again, that's been filmed already, and that's now in post-production, and I played a role in that and also was a co-producer on that. So, you know, sometimes it seems like they're overlapping more than they are, but, you know, you kind of balance it. You're lucky if you're having trouble balancing it. There's too much going on at the same time.
Paul Borghese here, I guess. We've got 10 minutes here with Paul. You know, one thing I do want to say, Paul, is, you are, and I'm not just saying this because you're on, but you are a great, awesome guy. And, you know, I know we have a truncated version of the interview that we are going to do, but we're hoping that you'd be willing to join us again. We're not ready to go yet, but hopefully you'll be able to join us again. Maybe we can get Barry on with us.
Yeah, I'd love to come back. Absolutely, sure. You know, we got in whatever we got in tonight. I'm happy we did. And, I get in touch with Barry and see if we can get Barry to join us. Barry and I keep very in touch with each other. We became very close friends since we did the movie together. His daughter, I'm Uncle Paulie to his daughter. His wife gave birth to his daughter while we were shooting 61. So known her whole life. So there's a definite sentimental attachment to us having made the movie together.
You know, and I always tell everybody that, you know, I got a good friend. He's from New York. His name is Paul Borghese. And I'll tell you what, man, he's a nice guy, but he can also be a gangster if you get on his bad side, you know?
Yeah, we can all go bad if we need to go bad, you know?
So now you... are you currently directing a film right now, or you're working on directing a film?
Right now I have two films in development that I'll be directing, and one is this Christmas movie that I mentioned before, and another one is a smaller film that I'm going to be getting done just before that. But right now I'm not on set per se directing right now. I just finished playing a role in a movie. And I have some other things coming up, but I'm not, like, on set right now. But we're always working, because when you're not on set, you're finishing something up, you're in post-production, you're editing, you're sound mixing, you're doing music, you're writing for the next thing or whatever it might be, or consulting. I do a lot of consulting. I'm also teaching now, so I have seminars and workshops. So there's always a lot going on, you know. Probably never retire.
You know, and one other thing I was going to ask, and our fans knew this was coming, you know, this Christmas movie that you're talking about, if you need someone to work for free that would come and carry your bags and get your cappuccino from one of the local coffee shops, I am your guy.
Well, I don't think I would let you work for free, but I think I would give you something more important to do than that.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to get my foot in the door. You can ask anybody. I'm a great guy.
Who the hell cares?
All right, thanks, Big Swing. I appreciate that.
Paul Borghese,
what Big Swing likes to do is he likes to play these little sound effects. Like if I start talking about myself too much, he starts playing that, and he lets me know I'm going off the rail. So we'll get back on track.
I think
now, what?
Really said that.
So now, what, you know, you mentioned you're not on set right now, so you're kind of like taking a break. When do you are you looking to do other things in the meantime before you start these other two projects, or are you just like kind of like taking a quick little break?
Well, that's what I was saying. They're not even really breaks. It's just that when you're not on set, you're always working. So if you're not on set, either acting or directing, you're in post production studios, editing or supervising music score or sound mixing, or you know, you're developing a new project and you're having meetings. I have a film office where I'm constantly having meetings to talk about new projects, some of which I'm collaborating on, some of which I'm just hired for. So you know, there's always something. And again, I mentioned that I'm going to be teaching now, so I got together with a few different people. I've been doing a lot of work with Bobby Maresco now. He's Bobby's an Oscar winner for writing and producing the movie Crash, if you remember the movie Crash. And right now he's got a movie he wrote and directed that's premiering in Italy called Lamborghini. So I've been working with him and closely with his daughter Amanda Maresco, and we're putting together workshops and seminars for people that want to get into acting, want to get into writing, and kind of teaching them how to do everything from soup to nuts. So there's really, you know, what's the expression? There's no rest for the weary.
Right.
So there's always something going on.
So these are high school kids you're going to be teaching?
Well, they'll be, you know, it'll be sort of not just high. I mean, there's adults that want to become actors, you know, there's people that retire and want to become actors or want to write a screenplay. So it's going to be a wide age range. It'll probably be from like 17 up.
Okay. The reason why I was asking this, you know, we had Tito Santana on about 3 years ago now, and I know you don't care, but I'm going to mention it anyway. He's a math teacher now, and I asked him, I said, so when students realized that you were a pro wrestler, how many started acting up so they could get an autographed note signed from the teacher sent home to their parents because they acted up because they knew you were Tito Santana?
That's
now, if students are acting up in class because you got to sign a note home, now you know why, because you are Paul Borghese. That's why it's happening.
That's a good point. But I would voluntarily and most very easily give an autographed picture. I'm very always happy to do that, especially in like local pizzerias and dry cleaners and places like that. They all get a big kick out of that. So I'm always ready with something in the car to give them. So, but that's a good one about the wrestling autograph. I like that one.
And I do have some good news for you. On Friday, I'm going to have those cards I made for you. I'm going to have those printed off, and I'm going to get them sent to you. You just need to text me where you want me to send them. And I'm going to make those up for you because, you know, you are a good friend of mine, and I do appreciate everything you do for us.
That's actually one of the most awesome things that I saw, even though I only saw it digitally so far. I was like, I've shown so many people. I'm like, wow, that's like the coolest thing. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'll probably be calling and saying, hey, can I order some more of those? Because those would be great for when I do shows and all that stuff. Make sure your logo and your stuff is on there, since you designed it, you know. Make sure whatever you put on there is on there.
Sure, I will. I'll definitely do that. And let's go back to 61 again real quick. And, you know, 61 years ago, Roger broke the record, and unfortunately his record fell. And we do believe it was legitimate with Aaron Judge. I mean, he hasn't been accused of being on the gas or anything like that. But, you know, the one thing, and as you know in the movie, how much bad stuff that Roger had to go through with writers and reporters. And I will never like that one actor that played Artie. I will never like that guy because I know it was just a role. But, you know, when you got to meet the family, what was it like when you first met them?
The Maris family?
Yes.
I mean, they're like really like the nicest people in the world. They're just so, you know, friendly. I just remember when, you know, meeting them, you know, I'm Roger Maris, I'm Kevin Maris. So, you know, like you just kind of like, they're just very gentle and kind people. Pat Maris, you know, Roger's wife, they're just also lovely. Even the the boys, their wives, and then after that, when they invited Barry and I to the tournaments, you know, we just got to know them so much better. Like, I remember we stuck around an extra day once and went golfing just with them, the Maris boys, and, they, you know, I got a little bit better that time because they were coaching me, and they were like pros and stuff, you know? So I just thought, you know, Pat Maris, you could give us something special every year for attending the tournament, whether it be a beautiful, you know, this black baseball bat I have that's beautiful. It says, you know, Roger Maris, Celebrity Baseball, Celebrity Golf Tournament. And then she gave us a beautiful club that's engraved, you know, one year, and another year she gave us a beautiful leather binder that had the, you know, the logo of the tournament. And I just can't say enough nice things about them. We had a lot of fun at the tournament, but a wholesome time, you know. I've been to some celebrity golf tournaments that, you know, like the Hawaiian Tropic Celebrity Golf Tournament that I was a judge at. It was a much different experience than the Roger Maris Celebrity Golf Tournament. But they both were fun.
That's awesome. I would have loved to have been part of that tournament. It probably would have been hard for me to play golf, but...
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. We got about 30 seconds here, Paul. If our fans want to check you out and see, do you got a Facebook, an Instagram, a YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a TikTok? What do you got?
Well, paulborghese.com is my website, www.paulborghese.com. And I'm on Instagram as Paul Borghese, same spelling. So follow me on Instagram. You'll see a lot of cool stuff from 61 on there. And, I'm on Facebook, too. So, yeah, I'm all over the place. Just Google me. You'll find me.
Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, Paul, thank you so much. We're definitely going to have you on again. And I'll make sure that time zones have never been my strong suit. Just ask any guest when I call them at 2 in the morning, like I have you sometimes. I promise we'll make sure that I start learning time zones. I'm going to start taking a class. Maybe I might have to take a couple classes. But I do appreciate you, Paul, and you are awesome. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me, and you guys, you all have a nice night, and have a great week.
Awesome. Paul Borghese, ladies and gentlemen, we love everything that he does. Our next guest is coming up here. We're going to take a little commercial break here, and then when we come back after these messages, we'll have our next guest. The new WoodSpring Suites of Fargo, located at 1090 35th Street North at the I-29 and 12th Avenue North interchange, is an extended stay, pet-friendly hotel with kitchenettes in every room, including a stovetop, full-size fridge, and microwave, plus a big 40-inch flat-screen TV with free Wi-Fi. You can book a room at 701-582-1600 or online at www.woodspring.com. WoodSpring Suites of Fargo, rated 4.2 by TrustScore. Ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle. She is the reason why everybody watched the movie Back to School. She is the reason why she is perfect. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you right now, she is Leslie Scarborough.
Hey, this is Leslie Scarborough. You are listening to the Attitude Era Monday, Live Monday on 89.1 KENS FM, KENS FM, with your host, the icon, the big swing, the godmother of wrestling, Granny Hulkster, and the modern nightmare, Matthias.
How are you, Leslie? Good to have you with us tonight.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. It's been a good day. I'm out here in California in a different time zone. I have a real head for time zones, so I can't understand how people don't have a head for time zones. It's funny to me. But I'm a night owl.
Well, you know, so. It's the icon, so he's, you know, he doesn't know what, well, anyway, if I would have paid more attention to school instead of taking naps, I would have been fine. Leslie Scarborough is our guest here. We got 27 minutes here, Leslie, and hopefully you won't hang up on us with some of these questions, but we're going to go ahead and fire them, and then we'll do a roundtable. Then we'll come back to me. I'll ask you the tough question. But first thing I want to ask you about, probably the role that sticks out the most is back to school. You're credited as being co-ed number one, which means you were the best co-ed in that movie. Let me ask you, what was it like being on set with Rodney Dangerfield and the fact that you weren't wearing anything?
Well, I wasn't wearing absolutely not anything. And first of all, they were, I mean, it was a really respectable set. Like, they had this big, fluffy, white, you know, I don't know, what is that called? That terry cloth. Yeah, that super soft terry cloth robe. And they had that ready the second, you know, we did a few takes, and like the second we stopped, they had that thing wrapped around me. So the only person who really saw me, it really was very tight, I guess, was the director, the cinematographer, and Rodney. And, you know, I was raised pretty European, so breasts, that's a PG word, right? Boobs.
Yep.
aren't that, I mean, you know, there aren't, and they're just another part of the body, and they're kind of pretty acceptable in Europe. People go sunbathing topless. I wasn't that freaked out by it at all, and I was treated so well, and I did have a nude-colored song on the bottom.
Okay. Well, that just ruined my childhood, but I'm kidding.
Oh, no.
But,
well, you know, well, a nude-colored song, you know, doesn't leave a lot to the imagination, but again, whose
right.
imagination was Rodney, and he was so cool. I was kind of scared of him. I thought he might give me a hard time, or, you know, you never know. And or have a star attitude. Oh my gosh, not at all. Nicest, easiest, totally like the best you would expect him to be.
Now, in between takes and everything, was he always cutting jokes and trying to make people laugh and all that kind of stuff?
You know, he's pretty professional, and I'd like to say, oh, yeah, he had everybody laughing, you know, continuously. But I don't recall it being that way. However, I do know he made us laugh. It was just not nonstop. It was perfect.
And you are perfect, definitely. And we'll talk about
him. I'm talking about him.
Yeah, well, in all that, we'll talk about when you saw the movie in the theater with your husband at the time. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But before I ask you, you know, you were also in Airwolf, which was, you know, with one of my heroes. I'm so nervous talking to you, I forgot his name. Ernest Borgnine, sorry. You know, that was kind of cool. You had being on Airwolf on that series.
I was only on it, you know, as a guest star, not even a full guest star. It was a smaller role, a scene in a club. And I think, I don't even remember whether Ernest Borgnine was in that scene. All I cared about was Jan Michael Vincent at the time being in the scene, and he was, and my lines were with him, and that was awesome.
And if you go to Amazon Prime, type in Airwolf and type in episode Birds of Paradise, and you will see Leslie in that film, in that TV show.
Yeah, we're in great dress, man.
I
just remember the dress.
Right. Now, I'm going to come back and ask you a few tougher questions, but first I want to introduce you to Granny Hulkster. Now, I know that she has a few cool questions about, I believe, Rodney Dangerfield is her hero. So, Granny, what do you got? Go ahead.
Well, welcome to the show, Leslie. It's a pleasure and honor to have you on. And I'm not so sure that Rodney Dangerfield is my hero icon, but I do remember that movie Back to School. And I loved that movie. That was a real funny movie. I do remember that. That was a great and awesome movie. So what was it like just to be a part of that movie with a great cast of characters that was involved in that?
You know, it's a funny thing that you'd ask that, because at the time, I was just thrilled that I had a scene with Rodney Dangerfield, but I didn't. It was one of those things that kind of creeps up on you over the years. I mean, by the time it came out, I knew it was good and it was funny, and there was a great after party, a great wrap party, and my dad happened to be in town, who's no longer with us now. So I cherish that my dad like got to go to that, and Rodney was there. As far as I recall, gosh, you know, we drank a lot. I just know my dad was so thrilled. So he must have met him. I was hanging out with my friends, but it was at the top of the Roosevelt Hotel in Los Angeles, which is a really nice hotel, and they really threw an amazing party. And I started to kind of realize, yeah, this was kind of a big deal, this movie. I'd done a lot of sort of beach and horror movies and kind of B-movies, and I just thought it's just a fun, silly movie. But, man, I mean, I remember lines from it. So many people remember lines from it. Like, it touched people. It moved people. It became, an iconic film. But at the time, when you're making something like that, you don't know, and you're just doing this small part in a shower in some part of Hancock Park in Los Angeles in a beautiful house. And, you know, you come in and you do your part, and then you go. And you don't know the rest of the movie. You don't know the rest of the script. And, I mean, Icon, I think you were saying to me that you were going to ask me about seeing it with my husband in the theater, so I won't go into that right now. But, you know, it does kind of dawn on you, oh, this is a really great movie. So I'm really excited to be a part of this. But when they actually shot it, it was a day's work, you know, or half a day's work. That's the other thing. They got me in and out of there so fast. And they paid me nicely, too. They were very, it was just a really nice experience. And I was nervous, you know, like, because, yeah, it was Rodney Dangerfield, and I was topless, and I wasn't topless in everything. So I was topless in a few things, but I didn't know how that was going to go. And I remember going home going, wow, that was a good experience. Cut to many years later when he passed away, and it all like exploded. Like, it still up to that point had just been a really cool credit I had that some people recognized me from, strangely enough, especially guys of a certain age. But once he passed away, it became legend, you know? So when you ask me what it felt like, oh, I got a cool part on sort of a cloudy day in the morning in L.A., and I shot it, and they were great, and I got to meet Rodney Dangerfield, and he was cool, and that was it for them.
Leslie Scarborough is our guest here. We got 19 minutes here, Leslie. Now, I want to introduce you to Matthias. Now, I know that he's going to apply to be your bodyguard, but one of his favorite movies of yours was Satan's Princess, because he's our horror film guru and also our wrestling guru here. So, Matthias, what do you have for our guest? Go ahead.
Well, first off, I want to welcome you onto the show. Yes, you're talking to the man from every woman's greatest dream and every man's worst nightmare, North Dakota's number one heel, current reigning, defending, undisputed EWI Diamond and APW World Heavyweight Champion, Matthias.
Ooh.
Welcome onto my show. My main question for you, you're welcome.
Your show?
Yeah, yep. It's my show now because I'm talking to the guest. but anyway, my main question for you would be right now, because I always like to ask this question to a new guest and somebody I'm not familiar with, all too familiar with, or someone I haven't talked to before. When was the moment you knew you made it? Was there like a specific project you worked on, or what was your this is now moment where like you're thinking, this is what I want to do for my life, this is what I want to work on, this is blah, blah, blah. What was your moment?
And you can't say meeting me because that'd be too easy.
You know, I can't ever say I thought I made it, but where I felt like what you're saying, that thing of, oh, yeah, I want to do this. I had a few of those. I really did. one of them, since we're talking about the Rodney Dangerfield movie, is during the years I wasn't working at all, actually, and I had moved up to Sun Valley, Idaho with my husband to raise our kids up there in the 90s. So I did work in the 80s here and then moved up to Sun Valley, Idaho, and I was at a gallery opening, and there were these guys, like, God, how old must they have been? Because it was 1986. If they were like 16 in 1986, maybe they were 23 or 4 in 1993 or 4. And they're looking at me. And I'm, like I said, I did a lot of commercials and a lot of big parts in small movies and small parts in big movies. So I'm not like used to being recognized. And in some ways, I think that's a big blessing. But it is kind of fun. And so this group of guys was staring at me at the gallery, and they're giggling, and they're pointing at me, and they're going, no, you go, no, you go. Finally, this guy walks up to me and just goes, you're perfect. And I looked at him like, I mean, seriously, I hadn't thought about that in a long time. And I was like, what? And I went, oh. And he goes, yeah, we're your fans. We made posters of you by freeze framing. Apparently, freeze framing and printing that shower scene. So I was like, "Oh my gosh!" Like, yeah, that's the first time I kind of like went, "Oh, I'm a little bit famous. That's kind of fun," especially since I wasn't working and I was a mom and I was dealing with diapers and stuff. So that was like, yeah, I want to go back and do that again. So there was that, and then there was, before that, when I was in the Philippines doing this Roger Corman film called Demon of Paradise, and I was on an island. Well, I was actually up in the mountains above, it's a place called Lake Caliraya, and Pagsanhan Falls, if anybody's been anywhere near outside Manila, it's a beautiful area. And I was listening to music. Madonna, Madonna had that song out. Oh, God, I can't think of it now, but if I could count a thousand times. I can't remember what the name of the song is, but it was when she was with Sean Penn. And the sun was setting, and it was in the Philippines, and I just had a day of shooting. And my at that time, husband-to-be, I guess he was my fiancé then,
Leslie, before you do that, we just got to take a quick little time out. We got to do a quick little legal thing here, we'll be back.
You're listening to 89.1 KENZ FM, KNNZ FM, Holly, Fargo, Moorhead, independent public radio for Fargo, Moorhead, and the Valley. Also on the web at www.kenzfm.com.
And we are back here on 89.1 KENZ FM. We have Leslie Scarborough here. We have 15 minutes. Now, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but go ahead with continue your story.
Oh, I was just saying it was a dreamy moment, and my fiance was coming out, and we were going to get married on the last day of filming, and I just thought life is pretty cool. And that song by Talking Heads was pretty big then. I think it was 1986. It was another part of 1986 because I did Back to School right after that. And it was that song, she's making movies and she doesn't know what it means. She's on location making movies. She don't know what it means. And I thought of that, and the movie makes you want to be the story. And I just thought, I'm living a song. This is so cool. So, yeah, to answer your question, those are some of the key moments. Me.
That's awesome. So, Leslie, I want to ask you a couple other roles that you played. As a matter of fact, here on our store, on our show, we get our information from imdb.com. Now, I don't know if this is accurate, but it says that you're currently filming a movie called Melody's Tune. Is that correct?
That we finished. And I don't know, it has not come out yet. I don't know if it's in editing or what's happening, but yeah, we finished that like, I don't know, like over a year ago. And I play a detective, and it's about a little girl and a little homeless girl, and her mom, who's also homeless, and I'm a detective who interrogates the little girl to make sure that the person that's taking care of her isn't, like, kidnapping her or something. It's a real straight role. It's not my old goofy blonde roles. I'm not doing those because I'm older now. I'm.
Well, you're still beautiful, though.
Well, thank you. I don't know where you're looking, but yeah, I'm good. I'm good with things.
I like that, where I'm looking. Anyway, Leslie Scarborough is our guest here. And for those of you who are regular listeners of the show, if you go to our Facebook page, Attitude Era Monday, Live Monday, you like that, go to 89.1 Ken's FM, like that, and do a $10 a month Power of the Tower. We'll get you qualified to win an autograph from a past guest, current guest, or a future guest. Leslie, would you be willing to send us a few autographs for giveaways?
Yeah. I mean, am I supposed to have pictures autographed?
Well, whatever you got. I mean, even if it's an index card, we'll take anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Because I'm sure that you don't, unlike me, you don't have a picture of the shower scene from Back to School up on the wall like I used to.
No, not like those guys that greeted me at the art gallery either. No, I didn't know anybody did that until then. No, I don't. And I don't know if you want old pictures or new pictures. But
I'll tell you what, whatever you feel that you'd be willing to do, that'd be fine.
Sure.
Okay. Yes. Now, another movie that you're in that I really enjoyed, you were actually in a movie with Ralph Melf, Donnie Most. You were in Stuart School. It was like being on, I think that was a bigger role, though, wasn't it?
I mean, that's what's so funny. Back to School was probably the shortest role I ever had, the least I've ever said, which was nothing, and I don't
but
know
they,
if
they did
say
cut
that.
Out lines, though, right?
Cut out my lines. There was a whole dialogue between Rodney and I about him looking for his son and thinking that, and what was I doing in a fraternity, and I'm like explaining to him he's in a sorority, and it's funny, but apparently they ran it and edited it, and as I discovered when I saw it with my husband in the back of the theater that was full, and the audience just burst into raucous laughter, I'm like, first thought was, my lines were cut. And then my husband turned to me and goes, it was really funny that way. And I'm like, yeah, it was. and then, of course, all the other things I did, this is the thing that people know me for, the girl in the shower with Rodney Dangerfield, seriously. So, yeah, I had most every part I ever had was bigger than that one. But the dancing on the table one with Donnie Most was in that. And that was Stuart School. That was a party scene, and I was a very uptight sorority girl. I'm always in the college things. And all in plaid, and then I get up on the piano and do a striptease dance. So that was pretty fun.
Leslie Scarborough is our guest here. We have about 7 minutes here, Leslie. And the thing is, Leslie, you're definitely not the roles that you play, that's definitely not you, because you actually take my calls, which is really interesting. One thing I do want to ask you about, let's see, how long did I have you on the phone last week? What was it, 40 minutes or something like that?
I don't recall speaking for 40 minutes. Did you talk to me for 40 minutes?
Well, wow. That's what the timer on my phone said. But anyway,
that's awesome.
Now, you were also in First and Ten, and for those of you who don't know, First and Ten was HBO's first football series, way before Ballers and way before any of those others. And she was, of course, in the TV series with T.D. Parker. O.J. Simpson, who played T.D. Parker. Now, did you get to have any interaction with O.J.?
No, zero. I did not even know he was on the show till yes. Now I remember the entire conversation, and you told me that last week, and I did not know that. Mm-mm. I had some old guy that was in a bed that I was I don't know what I did to him. I think I tied him up or something. I was a bad nurse, a funny nurse though. So I wasn't involved in that. I didn't know much about that show. You know, you come in and you do your part again. I was curious about who was it that saw me in Satan's Princess, because that was a little racy, you know.
Well, that was Matthias. You know, he likes those horror films, you know, and anything that deals with like movies like Friday the 13th and Halloween and all those, he's a guru for those. And so that's
And I was with Robert Forster in that movie. He was a detective looking for me, and I was the lost kidnapped girl, and it was an alien woman, but she was a woman, but she was disguised as a woman. She turned into an alien. It was pretty wild.
Leslie Scarborough's our guest. Now, also, Leslie, you are also, we have about 4 minutes here. You're also a writer, correct? You got a book out.
I do, yes. That book is about my mother's life. My mother was an immigrant from Germany. Well, she met my dad in Germany. He was in the Air Force after World War II, but met her there, married her, and created me above a theater that was playing a Leslie Caron movie, and that's why I'm Leslie. It also stars Fred Astaire. I guess I would have been Fred if I was a boy. I don't know.
Well, aren't you glad they decided to use Leslie instead of calling you Astaire?
Right. You're right. Or Leslie Caron. If they called me the Caron part, I could be. If people could think I was a Karen. They might.
Yeah. You know, and speaking of, if your name was Astaire, I mean, speaking of the movie Back to School, Astaire, you know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I did write a book about my mom because she led a pretty interesting life growing up as a German child living through World War II. And she wasn't Jewish, but she was German and actually lived in Czechoslovakia in a little German enclave, and they were not nice to those people either. She had a pretty rough time of it, and I didn't really know how much until my dad passed away and gave me her journal, her diary, and it was so interesting that I made a book out of it. And so yes, it's called Tishy, T-I-S-H-I.
And where can fans get the book if they want to read it?
Amazon. It's Tishy Mother. Oh my God, immigrant. No, it's immigrant refugee. No, my gosh, I wrote it in 2017. Tishy. Refugee immigrant mother. That is it. Because her name was Anneliese, and she didn't like the way people pronounced Anneliese in America. They pronounced it Annalise. And her last name was Tishy. My dad always pronounced it wrong and called it Tishy, so she just went with Tishy. So Tishy was her name in America. And, it's a whole immigrant comes to America in the early 60s. And growing up, and me growing up as an immigrant daughter and lying about my mom's accent or telling people she was the maid. I did horrible things. I'm so proud of her now, and I'm so proud that I speak German and that I spent a lot of time visiting Europe when I was a child. But I was very annoyed with it when I was a child. I just wanted to be like everybody else and have a normal mom.
Leslie Scarborough is our guest here. We have about 60 seconds. If our fans want to check you out and see, do you got a Facebook, an Instagram, a YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a TikTok? What do you got?
I only have the Facebook, which is under my name, Leslie Scarborough, and then at Les Directly, LesDirectly, is my Instagram. So, and then they can Google me anytime, and all that comes up.
And if you want an answer back, don't tell her you know me. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, folks. I'm kidding. It's what?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
All right, well, Leslie, I'll tell you, you have been awesome, and I do appreciate it. And if we didn't scare you away too much, we'd love to have you back on again. And you have been just amazing. Actually, you have been perfect.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, that's not a bad way to go. I mean, thank you. And
thanks,
I
Leslie.
All righty. Good night, everybody. Bye.
All right. Take care. Leslie Scarborough, ladies and gentlemen. The gal from Back to School, and that was awesome. All right, well, I'll tell you what, I think our next guest is waiting in the wings right quick here. We're going to take a quick little time out, and we will be back after these messages from one of our sponsors. And that would be this one right... Nope, it's not there. Okay, all right. We'll bring our next guest out of the green room right now. Ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle, the man who made Nickelodeon what it was, the man that made Nickelodeon the network that was so famous that caused me to get grounded so often, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the man himself. He is Marty Schiff.
Hey there. This is Marty Schiff. You're listening to the Attitude Era Monday, live Monday, on 89.1 Ken's FM with your host, the Icon, the Big Swing, the Godmother of Wrestling, Granny Hulkster, and the Modern Nightmare Matthias.
How are you, Marty? Good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us tonight.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And I'll tell you what, we're definitely gonna talk about the TV show that got me grounded several times, but we'll
yes,
definitely talk about that. And we're also going to talk about your other stuff because we have Marty Schiff here. We got 40 minutes here with the man, and we're just going to go through the whole gamut. But first off, if you want to give us a quick little background about yourself, then I'll ask you a few questions. We'll do a round table, and we'll come back to me and I'll ask you the tougher questions.
Okay. Well, I'm here because I was an actor on a series of Nickelodeon, and when I was 10 years old, I decided I wanted to go to Hollywood, and I told my parents I was moving to Hollywood, and I was going to change my name to Tim. I have no idea why. That always just sounded like a great name to me. So my mother said, "You should wait." My father said, "I'll help you pack," but it was it was something that I always wanted to do. And back in the day, you didn't have film schools like you do today. And so I did the next best thing, which was theater. I got involved in regional theaters in Pittsburgh. And I ended up going to Point Park. It was college then. Now it's university, for a degree in theater. And while I was there, George Romero from famous for Night of the Living Dead, was doing Dawn of the Dead, and they came to my acting class at Point Park and said, "We need someone to get hit by a truck and be a zombie for $25. So I jumped up thinking that everybody in class was going to jump up, but I was the only one standing. So I got cast by default. I ended up going out and doing a stunt with Tom Savini, and George loved what I did, and he said, "Do you want to get hit by a sledgehammer and thrown into a garbage can on Saturday night?" I said, "Do I get another $25? He said, "Yeah." I said, "I'm in." So I went and did the sledgehammer bit. And that was the night, if you're familiar with the movie, that a motorcycle gang raids the mall. And they needed some actors to round out the motorcycle gang. So I was in the right place at the right time. And George put me in a leather jacket and a pair of shades. And I ended up being a biker. And I worked on Dawn of the Dead for another 30 days after that. And that was my film school. I would sit on the set and watch George direct and watch Mike Gornick shoot. And just really, that's where I learned how to make movies. And I would move a little closer every night, a little closer, until I was about 5 feet away from George. And he and I would start to talk, and we became friends. And I ended up working with George several times after that. I did Creepshow, Knight Riders. Worked on a series called George Romero Presents Dead Time Stories, and wrote a script for George. And we just stayed friends throughout the years. But I had graduated from Point Park and moved out to L.A. and came back and did Knight Riders with George, went back to L.A., came back and did Creepshow with George, went back to L.A., and got my first TV series, which was The Book of Lists, which was on CBS, and it only lasted 4 weeks before we got pulled, but it was enough to get me started in TV. And so from that point on, I worked mostly in television. I did a few films after that, but did mostly sitcoms, and of course we're going to talk about Out of Control on Nickelodeon, but and commercials. I did a Little Caesars pizza commercial, which is on YouTube. If you Google 90s arm wrestling Little Caesars pizza, you'll see it. It's on YouTube right now.
You know, and Marty, the other interesting thing, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the other interesting thing is,
yeah,
you know, you were in a movie called Knight Riders, and then you were actually on the TV show Knight Rider. And you got taken out by a sledgehammer, and you're also on the TV show Sledgehammer. So you kind of like
that's exactly right.
And like, in class, I'm sure you're out
of
control.
Coincidences.
Yes. In class, I'm sure you're out of control jumping up, so that's how you got that part too.
There you go. There you have it. So anyways, I had a great run of it in L.A., and then I always wanted to produce and direct, and I started moving into producing and directing, and worked with a company called The Gold Company, doing development, which was I did script coverage, basically, and we did Blank Man and Ace Ventura and Mo Money and Eric Gold, who was the head of the company, was the executive in charge on In Living Color. So we were around that. I didn't work directly on the show, but it was part of what we were doing at the time. And then the Northridge earthquake hit, and I ended up coming back to Pittsburgh. And that's where I've been since the Northridge earthquake, which I actually came back a little bit later. But I've been back here working, and the digital era kind of happened at the same time, and production was leaving L.A. You know, it's still a third of production is still done in Los Angeles, but the rest of it is done in places like Atlanta and New York and New Orleans and Pittsburgh. So my timing wasn't too bad actually coming back.
Marty Schiff is our guest here on 89.1 Ken's FM. We got 35 minutes here with Marty. And our horror film guru, I know he's going to be asking you about Dawn of the Dead and also Knight Riders and Creepshow. We'll get to him in a little bit, but we're going to come back to me and talk about Out of Control, because I have a lot of questions about that, but I'm going to let these two ask you a few questions first, and we're going to come back to me, then we're going to get Out of Control, as they say. Granny, what do you have for our guest, Marty Schiff? I'm watching his Little Caesars commercial right now. Go ahead, Granny, what do you got for our guest? Go ahead.
Well, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you.
Gosh, I can't really think of a really great question right now because Icon's kind of taken some of the great questions that I had in mind. So what's the most interesting thing that you've done in your career?
You can't say this show because that'd be too easy.
I would have to say that I've done a lot. And one of the most interesting things I did when I was Book of Lists on CBS that I had mentioned earlier, I got to wrestle a tiger and have an elephant lay down on top of me, which was really kind of exciting. But that was interesting. I did a lot of my own stunts throughout the years. I met a lot of interesting people, and that to me, I think, is really been one of the greatest parts of my career. I got to meet people that I grew up watching, like E.G. Marshall and Leslie Nielsen and Phyllis Diller. I got to meet these people and hang out with them and work with them. That was the greatest part. That's really been the greatest part of my career, is just meeting all these wonderful people.
Awesome.
Marty Schiff is our guest here, and Marty, before I introduce the Modern Nightmare here, he is our horror film guru, and I know that he's seen you in The Creep Show and Dawn of the Dead. We're going to get all the other stuff out of the way, and I know you probably don't want to talk all about Out of Control. I'm going to ask you about your other film roles, but Nightmare, what do you got there? Go ahead.
Well, welcome onto the show. It's always a pleasure talking to a fellow horror fan slash actor, that kind of thing. I am the man from every woman's greatest dreams, the man from every woman's greatest dream and every man's worst nightmare, North Dakota's number one heel, the current reigning, defending, undisputed EWI Diamond and APW World Heavyweight Champion. Well, like I said, welcome onto the show. Yeah, I've seen a few of your pictures, Dawn of the Dead, and the zombie horror movie series and that kind of stuff were always one of my favorites growing up next to the slasher genre. Night of the Living Dead was great, and Dawn of the Dead, of course, the one you were in. Now, what was it like getting to work under, like, first off, what was it like working under Romero and getting to work with, like, a special effects artist like Tom Savini? Because in one of my other favorite ones, I'm trying to think of which one it is now. I can't remember off the top of my head. It's the one where the army people are stuck underneath the ground with the scientists.
Oh, Day of the Dead. That was
Day of the Dead.
Yes.
And, like, it has those just ultimate, just disgusting kills in it with the guts and everything. Like, what was it like working with those two? And then what was one of your favorite horror movies growing up?
Well, working with George was really great. I worked with a lot of directors in my day, and, you know, they're all different. Every director you work with is different. They have their own style. George
Absolutely.
Really let you work. He let you be an actor, and he would let you do your thing, and, you know, occasionally would guide you around a difficult spot. But for the most part, he trusted you, and that was the greatest thing. His sets were always fun. I mean, he always kept the show moving. He always kept the production going, moving forward, but it was always fun. It wasn't tense. You walk on some sets sometimes, and there's a lot of stress. You can feel it when you walk onto the set, but never with George. It was always really comfortable and fun environment. And he had built a family, really. If you look at the cast of Dawn of the Dead and then you look at the cast of Knight Riders, it's almost the exact same cast. You've got Kenny Foray, you've got Scotty Reiniger, you've got Tom, you've got me, you've got Tasso Stravakis. All of us that were in Dawn of the Dead also end up in Knight Rider. And I think ultimately it would have been George's dream to have an ensemble group that did movies, and, you know, every year or so we would do another film, and pretty much that's what he did. He used people repeatedly, which was great, because so many of us got our careers through George and started by working with George. And a lot of people have gone on, John Harrison, Nick Mastandrea, and have done wonderful things. Tom Savini, you know, really got started by working with George.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, so that was, it was wonderful working with him on that. As far as my favorite horror movie when I was growing up, I loved the Universal classics. I loved Frankenstein, and I loved Dracula. We had a show on in Pittsburgh with the Chili Billy Cardill called Chiller Theater, and he would show those movies at 11:30 at night on a Saturday, and I would stay up to watch them. The movie that scared me the most, and it's funny because my kids laugh at it, was The Exorcist. The movie came out when I was in high school, and that movie scared the heck out of me, and still to this day I find it pretty scary. My kids laugh at it, but I still think The Exorcist is one of the scariest movies ever made.
That was actually my next question. Was there ever a film that, you know, you used to watch or that you would even watch today that would even still get to you for a specific reason? And you kind of just answered that, but I grew up more, like, and that's even a common answer, is the classic horror movies or classic monster movies of Frankenstein and Dracula and all that. But for me, growing up, I initially started, my first ever horror film I ever saw was Scream, back in 96.
Oh, okay.
And I was a slasher fan throughout the years. You know, you got Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, Leatherface, Ghostface, all of them, was always my favorite genre of horror movie. And then I started getting into the monster movies and the zombie films and that kind of thing. And it just, I always have to go back to my classic slashers, in my opinion. Now, I guess one more question that I just kind of thought of. Was there a person that was in, like, that specific genre that you wish you could have worked with? Like, for me personally, if I ever got the opportunity, I would have worked with, like, Wes Craven or Robert Englund or even George Romero or Tom Savini. Those would be, like, my top four if I had the opportunity I would work with.
I think the simple answer is that I worked with George Romero and Tom Savini, and it doesn't really get much better than that. So I think that I've been very fortunate to work with those guys and still communicate with Tom on a regular basis. We see each other every week. And, you know, it's the, you know, I never really thought about that. If there was anybody that I would have liked to have worked with, I would have liked to have gone all the way back and worked with Lon Chaney, you know, one of the, I would love to have worked with the original people, the people that sort of created the genre, and yeah, and just know what was going on back then would have been great.
Yeah, I totally agree. That would have been cool too. And then the one thing that always gets to me is I asked, is there one movie that always gets to you? And you kind of answered that. One film that will always, like, because as a horror movie fan, like, I don't get scared very easily. And I've watched slashers to the point where, you know, it's like I know what's going to happen and stuff. So I don't get scared or jump that easy. But one part of a film that'll always get to me, it was the original Hatchet. And it was the second kill in that movie where the woman gets her mouth, the killer puts his hands in her mouth and rips her jaw in half. And it's just like I
yeah.
can feel my cheeks ripping at that point.
Yeah.
Like, because it just looks just so... I'm not sure if it was Savini working the makeup on that one. I can't really – I think it was, if I wasn't mistaken. But it's like he does so well with those effects and stuff like that. Even with Day of the Dead that we mentioned during with Bub the Zombie and stuff, when he saluted the sergeant and he got attacked in the elevator by the zombies and you just slowly see his bottom half just ripped in half and all you hear is – choke on him while he's slowly perishing by getting eaten. It's like, it's just those incredible, like, just looking at that stuff was just, wow. It's just, it was incredible.
Yeah.
Now I got to ask, I'm trying to remember, in Dawn of the Dead, were there a lot of that kind of stuff with special effects or no?
Oh, yeah, there was, you know, every night George would tell Tom, we're going to kill X amount of zombies tomorrow. And we're going to do some featured kills, and Tom would go home and work on it and come back the next day. The machete kill, which is one of the most famous, I think, kills in the movie, Tom had taken a machete and notched it out, and the actor that was supposed to be, that the notch was supposed to fit, couldn't make it that night, so Tom went around putting this machete on people's heads to see who would fit. And it turned out to fit Lenny Lee's, who was on the crew. It turned out to fit Lenny's head perfectly. And so Lenny ended up in the bit. I'm holding his head. Tom is doing the machete kill, of course. But that 14 seconds or 20 seconds of screen time has made Lenny world famous. He goes to conventions all over the world as the machete zombie, you know. But
exactly.
Yeah, we did so many kills. It's hard to remember. Tasso Stravakis, when they tore his chest open and the guts that came spilling out, that was actually from a butcher shop in Pittsburgh here in Bloomfield. And Tom had actually used that again in Day of the Dead when Joe Pilato, the bit you mentioned earlier, when Joe Pilato gets torn in half. And what had happened was they had taken a holiday break, I think it was, and the power was off, and all those entrails, all those guts rotted. And
That was exactly what I was about to talk about. That must have been absolutely
disgusting
to work with.
Yeah.
Like, I was watching featurettes and stuff, because, like, all those horror movies, I like watching special features and stuff like that back behind the scenes if I can. And you can just literally see him laying back, with all the entrails right in front of him, and the zombies are literally plugging his nose, and they're whiffing it away from themselves so they don't have to just witness that or, like, smell that. And it's like, I mentioned that to a previous guest we had a few shows ago. I was talking about that, too, because it's just like, that must have just been the worst, but it just came out the best. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask if any similar situations have happened to you throughout movie sets or not, like if you ever had any accidents or anything like that.
Well, before you answer that, we just got to mention that we have Marty Shipp as our guest here. We got about 20 minutes here left. I'll let you answer that question, and we're going to come back to me. I want to talk to you about the out of control.
All right. I would say, Tom and I sit around and talk about how many times we've been hurt as actors. You know, he broke his heels on Dawn of the Dead, where he did a stunt where, and of course we were working low budget there. So when Tom flips over the railing before he gets killed, he was landing on a bunch of boxes and some mattresses, and he overshot the mattresses and his heel slammed into the floor of the Monroeville Mall and did a little bit of damage. He was in pretty bad shape for a while. I actually broke three fingers on Dawn when I get killed, and I do a layout on the floor. We didn't have any mats or any pads, and I didn't let go of my guns, so they slammed, and they were real weapons, and fully weighted, slammed my fingers into the floor of the Monroeville Mall, so I cracked a couple of fingers doing that. I twisted up my ankle in a motorcycle accident in Dawn of the Dead, in Knight Riders, where I was actually just testing out the bikes and spun out and tore up my ankle. I got cut on Out of Control. We're going to talk about that in a minute. If you watch some of the episodes, you can actually see a bandage on my finger in some of the episodes on Out of Control, where I was doing a bit with a pair of scissors, and I cut the top of my finger off and had to go to the hospital, got stitched up, got 21 stitches, got patched up, came back in time to finish shooting in the afternoon. So I think if you talk to any actor that's got any experience at all, they were injured somewhere along the way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Marty Shipp is our guest here on 89.1 Ken's FM. We got 19 minutes. Now, the episode I believe you're talking about where you were working with the scissors was Worm Contest, where you were trying to sell the scissors. And
right.
You said, if you send me $500, I'll send you the scissors. And then Dave Coulier says, well, why would they want to send you money for a scissors? And they're like, and then you're like, well, send me something. I mean, one thing I love about your character, and can you give us a little intro as your character?
Oh, as Hearn?
Yeah.
No. Well, I mean, Hearn had some things that were sort of his trademarks. He had a laugh, that was that was Hearn's laugh. And then he said, whoa, a lot. And, there was just bits about Hearn that were iconic, I would call it. But, yeah, so the laugh, I think, was the biggest Hearn thing.
Well, my favorite thing about Hearn Burford, I used to watch that show, and my mom said, if you watch it, if that show comes on the television again, you are grounded. And, I'll tell you what, I spent a whole, the series of Out of Control lasted 20 episodes, and that was 20 weekends of grounding. But the other thing I liked about Hearn Burford is, your outfits. You kind of dressed like Mr. Turlick from WKRP in Cincinnati, and you always had the hat on, and you always had a different saying on your hat every episode.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes it would say push. It started out as press, then it was push, then it was pull, then it was we put on this space for rent. We changed that every single time and every single show. And that was the Oak O'Connor, who was the prop guy on the show. He would come up with the different things to put on the signs on my hat. But, yeah, everybody else got their clothing through, nice wardrobe houses and whatever. My wardrobe all came from, Salvation Army, Goodwill, secondhand stores, And I think I started a trend with plaid on plaid, with the plaid jacket and the plaid pants. But that was really some of the defining things of Hearn, was his wardrobe, his attitude. You know, he was always looking for a quick way to make a buck. He was always jealous of Dave for hosting the show. You know, we were the first show that was produced by Nickelodeon for Nickelodeon, or one of the very first shows. Prior to that, to Out of Control, they had taken other shows from other networks and put them on the air. Nickelodeon started as a programming called Pinwheel out of Cleveland, Ohio. And so a lot of the Pinwheel content migrated over to Nickelodeon as well. So we were kind of figuring it all out, and we were kind of the bad kids network. You know, Disney had, you know, the A students, and we had the C and D students. So, and we were proud of that, you know. So it was different. We were children's programming with an edge, and it was really a good time.
And, you know, I know fans are going to probably click when I start doing this, but Pinwheel, spinning around.
Yes.
I used to watch that show religiously as well. But the one thing about Out of Control, the fact that, you know, you get to work with Dave Coulier, I believe that was his first first bit. What's it like being with Dave Coulier?
It was the most fun I ever had going to work. I have to say, Dave and I laughed so much. There were so many takes that got ruined by not being able to keep a straight face, just by laughing. We had a blast on Out of Control, and Dave, of course, was just, you know, the best. He and I still talk, and just such a great guy, and I really, really loved working with him, and it was his first real breakout series was Out of Control, and it was just such a good time. I used to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning just laughing about something, you know, because of what happened on the set. And I'm happy to say that there's a bunch of the episodes are on YouTube. I think there's 26 episodes on there, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm a little disappointed that when Paramount picked up the library from Nickelodeon, Paramount Plus picked up Nickelodeon, they didn't pick up Out of Control. And I was kind of hoping it would get another life and people would get a chance to enjoy it. We didn't get any residuals for that show. We were actually on cable so early that there wasn't a contract for cable residuals just yet. And so it wouldn't be anything that we would get money for. But the show was just so much fun, and I just would love another generation of audience to see it.
Now, for our fans that are listening, you can go to YouTube, type in Out of Control Nickelodeon, and a list where you can click on, and you can watch every single episode just by clicking on the link. And the one thing, though, that stands out about the show, not only was it Hearn Burford, but I also believe that you know, you always had battles with Scoop Quickly to see who was the best reporter.
Yes. Angela Scoop Quickly, yes.
Diz was another character on that show.
Diz McNally, yes. And then Dave Stenstrom was Waldo. And it was just such a great ensemble. We all got along so well. Sometimes when you're working with people over, you know, a period of time, tensions grow, it gets weird, whatever, but it never did. We actually thought we were going to get picked up for more shows, and we were when we were supposed to find out, I was actually having a party at my house thinking, yeah, we got this in the bag, you know, but they decided to take Nickelodeon a different direction. They decided to make sure that most of their shows, all of their shows actually, had a good number of children within the cast. And we, of course, only had a guest star here and there. So we didn't fit the new direction that Nickelodeon was going. So they stopped producing us. But they reran the show for 7 more years. We were on the air for 2 years, and then they reran it for another 7. And so it ran for a good long time.
You know, the other thing I remember, the lineup, it was Danger Mouse, then Double Dare,
yes.
Then You Can't Do That on Television, then Out of Control, and then it was Inspector Gadget. I mean, I used to, you know, it's just sad that Nickelodeon is not the way it used to be. It was,
right.
It was the first network for kids, and now it's not really that anymore. To be honest with you, I don't even know what Nickelodeon has anymore.
Well, I don't know either, to tell you the truth. But you had back then the we were what they called a sundown channel. And so at 6 in the morning when the sun came up, we were on the air. And then at 6 at night when it went off, when the sun went down, we went off the air. And then Bravo, the Bravo network, would take our number, and they would go on and do until 6 in the morning. So we were only on 12 hours a day back in those days. So they would run a loop. Sometimes Out of Control was on four times a day or more, and You Can't Do That on Television, the same. You know, all of us were running, the shows were running multiple times in the day to create the wheel that would run for 12 hours. That's how little programming they had when we first started, because they didn't really have enough content to fill out a 12-hour schedule.
You know,
but it didn't matter because kids would watch the same thing over and over and over again.
Well, you know, it's kind of like, you know, like when Blue's Clues came out,
yes.
That you'd watch and I know nobody cares, but back in 96, 97, when we had the winter from heck here in Fargo, North Dakota, we were home a lot because of the bad winter. And, you know, I turned on Nickelodeon, kind of like trying to hope and find old reruns, and there was none. But I watched the show Blue's Clues. And the funny thing is they showed the same episode for five straight days. I'm like, what is this? This reminds me of my childhood. It's like I used to watch all these shows
yes.
at the same time. Now, one thing I do want to ask you about, I want to ask you about a couple other shows that you're on. We have Marty Shipp here as our guest here, and we have 9 minutes here with Marty. And for those of you who listen, if you go to Attitude Era Monday Live Monday, you like that. You go to 89.1 Ken's FM page, you like that. Do a $10 a month donation, Power of the Tower. We'll get you qualified to win a autographed picture from a past guest, current guest, and a future guest. And I believe that Marty's going to send us a few.
Yes.
Another show I want to ask you about is another one of my favorite shows that you were actually on was Perfect Strangers. And you were
yes.
in the first season, Get a Job, and you were the Rowdy Hockey Fan. What was it like working with Larry and Belky?
Well, you know, it was fun. That was a fun show to do as well. Mark Lynn Baker was who was Cousin Larry. He was in one of my favorite movies. He was in My Favorite Year with Peter O'Toole, which was written by a guy from Pittsburgh, by the way, Dennis Palumbo. And I just getting the chance to work with Mark Lynn Baker was really a good time because I already respected him as an actor. So it was a good time. It was really kind of fun. It was great to be on that set. The show had a great energy. Those two guys worked together very well. You know, so I had actually auditioned for the role of Larry. When Larry Anderson was originally cast in the role of Cousin Larry, and when they were looking to replace him, I had actually auditioned a few times for that role. So I was very familiar with the show. It was great to be part of it, even as a guest star, you know, in a featured role, which was a great time. I had a blast on that show.
And, you know, you were also in Sledgehammer. Now, that show, unfortunately, only lasted one season, but that had to have been a blast being with him, David Rausch.
Yeah, he was a good time, too. And the, you know, I have to say I'm very fortunate that I had sort of – my career was on two ends of the spectrum. My film career was horror and zombies and motorcycles and sort of a grittier experience. And then my television career was sitcoms and, you know, children's shows. So I had the best of both worlds, because most people don't get a chance to do that. Either you're one or the other, and that's it. But I fortunately was able to do both. Sledgehammer was a blast. It was a funny show, and I was surprised, actually, it only lasted one season.
And now one of my mom's favorite roles of yours, and I didn't have the heart to tell her that, Mom, you know that's Hearn Burford. I didn't have the heart to tell her that. But my mom loved Dallas, and you were Del Greco.
Did she? Yes,
you
I
were
was.
Del Greco. I did not have the heart to tell her that was Hearn Burford. You're watching him now on Dallas, but you used to ground me when I used to watch him on Out of Control. What gives? You know, I know she's listening now, but now she's like, really?
Well, I was much better behaved as a split personality in a mental institution on Dallas than I was as Hearn. You know, Hearn was generally genuinely out of control, but Del Greco was a whole different kind of character. That was a blast. I had so much fun working with Larry Hagman. He was a good time. I would have to say that was probably the second most fun I had going to work, and the whole ensemble cast. You know, it was sort of a little bit like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, with Larry as the lead, you know, and we all worked together very well, and that was a good time. That was really a blast doing that show. I loved doing Del Greco. It was a good time.
And you're also in Matt Houston. You made an appearance
yes.
in Matt Houston. And, of course, we talked about Knight Rider. Did you get to drive the car or ride in the car?
I didn't. Actually, I played a cab driver, and I got to drive David Hasselhoff around the entire episode, because in the episode he gets amnesia, and he doesn't know where he's at, doesn't know who he is or where he's going. And so I spent the whole day with him actually driving him around. It was really a good time. But, no, I did not get to sit in kit.
And yeah, I hate to admit this, but I did when I was a kid.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, Kit was here for the World of Wheels at the Fargo Civic Center. I actually got to sit in Kit, and he said, do not touch any of those buttons, none of them. And let's see, another episode, another cool show that you were in that I was going to ask you about. Now, what was it like working with Andy Griffith did you ever whistle the theme song to
no.
Mayberry with him?
In Matlock, you mean?
Yep.
Yeah. I was on the set. That part was very, very brief. But, he was fine. I really didn't get to interact with him very much, you know, not at all. Not like Dallas, where I was with Larry quite a bit, actually. Larry Hagman and I worked together quite a bit. Matlock was really a fairly quick role.
The other thing I was going to ask you, Marty, is when you get to be in these roles, whether it be Matlock or Matt Houston or Sledgehammer or Perfect Strangers, are you on the set just to film your scene, or are you there for the entire week or 2 weeks?
Well, usually you're just on a show like Dallas where you're part of an ensemble cast. It depends on what they're shooting that week. You know, you may only be on set 2 or 3 days, and then they'll be somewhere else on the other couple days. So it really depends on how the production is going. A lot of these shows where you're a guest star or featured actor or whatever, you're only there for a day or two. And so you're in and you're out, and that's it. Out of Control, I was on the set every single day because I was one of the series regulars. And so there's very few times in Out of Control where we're all not around, you know, at least within 5 minutes. There was rare that we weren't there. So we were on the set all the time for Out of Control. Other shows where you may only have a scene or two or three, you may only be on the set for half a day or a day, you know, and that's it.
And one thing I do got to do, because I forgot about it, I want to wish you a happy belated birthday. I know your birthday was September 25th. I was going to text
yes.
you, and I forgot about it, so I figured I'd do that here. You don't want me to sing happy birthday because I want our fans to continue listening, but we have Marty Schiff as our guest here. We got about 2 minutes. Marty, if our fans want to check you out and see it, you got a Facebook, an Instagram, a YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a TikTok.
Sure.
What do you got?
Well, they can find me on Facebook, Marty Schiff, and they can also find me on Instagram, and it's Marty Schiff PGH, which is abbreviation for Pittsburgh. So those are the two easiest ways to find me in social media.
And, you know, the other thing, Marty, I just want to thank you for being with us tonight. We only got a minute left. But, you know, you are an awesome guy. And when I found you, and I wanted to tell you the story about getting grounded because I used to watch you on TV, I'm just so honored for your friendship, sir. I can't thank you enough for that.
Well, you're very welcome, and I'm actually honored that I helped get you grounded so many times. It built character.
Right. Well, at least 20 weekends, because there was 20 episodes. But I'll tell you what, Marty, thank you very much for being with us. You are awesome. And
thanks for having me.
And I look forward to having the autographs in the mail, and I'm going to put yours right up next to Paul Borghese when I receive them. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. Thanks for everybody.
All right, Marty Schiff, ladies and gentlemen. We got about 4 minutes here before the show clicks off here. So we had a great show, didn't we not, guys, here?
Yeah, we did.
All right, and I got a surprise for you. October 31st, that's Halloween. We are going to have a show. And there's going to be all week, there's going to be stuff for Ken's FM. We'll get you more details next week. We want you to tune in that entire Halloween week. We want you to help raise money for Ken's FM. We'll get more details on that. But I have the ultimate surprise for you, Nightmare, on October 31st. We're going to have a guest. I'm not going to reveal it now, but we're going to have the ultimate guest that you I know that you'll know and love. And next week, usually we don't promote who's going to be on from week to week until Wednesday or Thursday, but next week we are going to have a brother of my comedic hero. Next week we are going to have Kevin Farley, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, his brother was Chris Farley, and I want everybody to tune in for that. I can't wait to talk to him about his brother and about all the stuff that he's doing. And, you know, we have more surprises. There's always bigger guests coming, and we're not going away as far as I know. But as long as we're still here, Granny, you're going to be with us, and Nightmare, you're going to be with us, correct, guys?
Always.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, we got about 60 seconds here before the before we get the axe. So until next week, this is Attitude Era Live, Monday Live Monday. This was episode number 289. And listen to us every Monday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. right here on 89.1 Ken's FM. And also, we want to make sure that you're listening to 89.1 Ken's FM all week long, because there's great music. There's live bands, live and local bands, and there's other shows and great shows that we are going to start promoting here on 89.1 Ken's FM, so we can have you start listening to them, and they will start promoting us, and we'll go live every Monday night. So until next week, you know what to do. Tune in with us, and love you, everybody. Be safe. Love each other. Care for each other. Until we meet again, we'll see you next week.
You think you know me? Yeah. Before I'm told, but part of me knows that I'm going too old. Could be what I thought.